Today's podcast, astronaut John Young, celebrating the Apollo program. This podcast is part of the Smithsonian Online Conference Series. Our show today is produced by the National Air and Space Museum and Learning Times in connection with NASA and the Smithsonian's Apollo Space Program Virtual Conference for Educators on November 10th, 2009. Learn more at smithsonianconference.org. I'm Jonathan Finkelstein of Learning Times. Joining us today is a true space pioneer. John Young flew twice to the moon. He walked on its surface and commanded the first space shuttle mission. His achievements during his 43-year career at NASA are unmatched. He was the first human to fly in space 6 times and launch 7 times, 6 times from Earth and once from the moon. He's the only astronaut to pilot 4 different types of spacecraft, flying in the Gemini, Apollo, and the space shuttle programs. Captain Young, thank you for joining us today.
Oh, nice to be here.
It's great to have you here. Now, as you know, the Smithsonian Education Online Conference, which is being produced by the National Air and Space Museum and sponsored by NASA, focuses on the Apollo space program. And I was wondering if you could tell those listening what you think are the most important aspects of the Apollo program that students today should know about.
Well, I think the technologies that we had to develop to get to the moon in Apollo, the Saturn V, and the vehicles that we used are really remarkable, and all the things that we did, all the technologies we had to develop to live and work on the moon are really significant and great to advance our technologies, and I think that was great for the future for our kids and grandkids, because I think in this century, if we industrialize the moon, you know, single planet species don't last, so we get people up living and working on the moon and maybe Mars, I think that'll be great.
It's pretty amazing when you think about the engineering and preparation that would go into an exploration like you just described. It certainly sounds like it takes a pioneering spirit. Would you say that was a prerequisite for anyone participating in that mission?
I don't know about pioneering spirit, but we all thought that we were doing a great job to go get up to the moon and see what was up there and see what kind of rocks they had. People predict they were going to we're going to get up there and find rhyolites, and we got up there and found an anorthosite and stuff like that. So we didn't find exactly the things we thought we were going to find on Apollo 16, but we learned a lot.
Are there areas of advancement today, either in the world of space exploration or any other field for that matter, that you think are comparable to Apollo in terms of its sheer ability to transform how humans view themselves and our planet?
Well, I don't know about that, but I do think that over the long haul, getting people that are able to live and work on Mars and the moon in real time and live and work up there will preserve the species, because I don't think over the long haul single planet species are going to last. We can either have an asteroid impact on Earth or a supervolcano on Earth that'll pretty much take us out. It's happened before back in the old days and could happen again.
Let's take a step back to April of 1972, the Apollo 16 mission. We've seen some amazing photos and video of you during that mission, and we've included links to some of those here with this podcast. But can you give us a sense as to what's going through your head as you prepare to walk on the lunar surface and maybe how it actually feels the first time you set foot on a place that most of us will only ever admire from afar?
Actually, we'd practiced developing the pressure suit, and I knew helped develop the pressure suit to go to the moon, and how mobile it had to be. And we had a 1/6 gravity simulator over at the Johnson Space Center that we used to work in and provide the mobility we needed to do things like gain our access to the rocks and stuff. We'd planned a lot to do the stuff that we did, and it worked out pretty well because the suit was very mobile, and we had tongs that we could pick up the rocks with and things like that, and it worked out very well.
What does it feel like to someone who's been in outer space, who's been to the moon, who's orbited the Earth, to look up into a night sky and up at the moon? What does it feel like to someone who's actually been there?
Well, I think we ought to have industrialize the moon in this century and live and have put our people up there and live and work up there And, you know, with the moon up there, you can send electrical power back to the Earth 24/7. And if you live at the South Pole or the North Pole of the moon, you probably find water up there, maybe, I don't know. And if you can, we can industrialize the moon and live and work up there, too. So getting us out to the moon and eventually on to Mars will help preserve the species for our kids and grandkids, which is a good idea.
As we mentioned, you're the only astronaut to have piloted four different kinds of spacecraft, which is just pretty amazing in and of itself. And your career is full of firsts in space. But I'm wondering, of all of the feats that you've accomplished as part of your work and your career in the space program, is there one aspect of your career or an accomplishment which personally makes you feel the most proud?
No, I like them all. You know, when you're doing them one at a time. And, mm-hmm. you know, they're test flights and you're finding out how a new machine works. And that's just the line of work we're in, test flying. And, you know, we found out a lot of things. We learned a lot of things from flying every vehicle. We had an incredible amount of experience we gained from flying the space shuttle, which, you know, flies into and out of the atmosphere. No other vehicle does. That's really something.
For young learners, the concept of space travel and space exploration is relatively routine compared to at least during the time of these earlier missions. You talked about humans working, living, settling upon the moon or perhaps Mars. Is that something that our young listeners can expect to happen during their lifetime? Might they themselves find themselves working or living on the moon?
Yeah, on the moon and Mars, it's a possibility. I think if we do the right kind of technology develop that we must do to live and work on the moon and Mars, we'll do a lot to preserve the species over the long haul, because over the long haul, single planet species don't last.
Well, what's the greatest challenge you think is standing between long-term settlements on the moon and where we are today?
Well, somebody realizing that we need to be doing that, and, you know, it's a human race, and, you know, I don't know who would think about doing it and industrializing the moon. There's a lot of folks living on Earth that could be living and working on the moon, and the 1/6 gravity up there is very nice to work in.
Now, let's say science and technology could allow us to go anywhere or do anything in outer space. What would John Young's next mission be?
Well, I'd like to go back to the moon. I think that'd be a lot of fun.
John Young, a space pioneer and member of the NASA team and hero to so many of us, thank you so much for joining us.
Okay, thank you for asking me. Thank you.
This podcast was part of the Smithsonian Online Conference Series and was produced by the Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum in association with Learning Times and NASA. To learn more about the Smithsonian's Apollo Space Program Virtual Conference for Educators, go to smithsonianconference.org.